Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Anthony Hitt said, "To be successful in real estate, you must always and consistently put your client's best interest first. When you do, personal needs will be realized beyond your greatest expectations." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who puts his client's interests first. Today's Playmaker believes it's the relationships that matter. With us today is a principal who was named one of the most influential business leaders in Dallas-Fort Worth by DCEO Magazine. This great playmaker is Bill Cauley. Bill is principal of Cauley Partners. With more than 30 years of experience as a commercial real estate professional, Bill Cauley has invested approximately $1.5 billion in commercial real estate assets in multiple markets across the country. Bill is the brand and the vision behind Cauley Partners, which is a Dallas-based real estate investment company that focuses on commercial office product. In his heart, Bill's an office guy who built his business as a service provider. He's acquired and developed more than 12 million square feet of commercial office product. In Dallas, Cauley Partners has been the premier office developer along the Platinum Corridor of the Dallas North Tollway, where Cauley Partners has developed almost 1 million square feet of Class A office space. It'll be real interesting talking to you, Bill. Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Well, I understand you received your business degree from Quincy College, which isn't too far from Mark Twain's stomping grounds. Were you already focused on commercial real estate back then?
You know, I'm one of the few people. I've got boy-girl twins that are 17, and my son kind of thinks he knows what he wants to do, and my daughter has no clue. But I was a kid from day one. I was always close to my dad, and when my friends were firemen or policemen when we were playing, I was a real estate guy. So I didn't know what it meant, but I always knew that real estate was my future.
What was the impetus that got you thinking in that direction?
My dad. I always looked up to my dad. He was my best friend. Now, you know, in my formative years and growing up, I had my issues with my parents, as all people do as they grow. But I was really close to my dad. I always looked up to him. I thought he was a special guy, and so I wanted to emulate him. And so it was always real estate. It was nothing else.
But you were the kind of person that wanted to make things happen, because I understand you had two main jobs, running a paper route and walking beans on your uncle's farm. Now,
yes.
You were in central Illinois. Tell us about those two jobs that you had that I believe came together at the same time.
Yeah, so I was always, like, I had a paper route in the morning, 5 a.m. I always was looking for ways to make a living because I wanted independence. Now, walking beans, my uncle hired us to walk beans, my brother and I. And I knew really early on that being a farmer wasn't in my future. That was too hard to work. I kept thinking, I'm going to figure out a way to make a living with my brain or my personality. But work ethic was always a big piece for me. But I had many different jobs. I worked at fast food restaurants, but like I actually got a job at a fast food restaurant when I was 15 by lying about my age. So working was always a big part of my life.
You mentioned your dad again. Do you believe you picked that up from your father in terms of your work ethic?
You know, my dad came from a poor family, and he had a very strong work ethic. And what I knew little. Like my dad, I would pick his brain and find out what his youth was like and what he'd went through. But he had a lot of jobs to try to support his mother, because his father died when he was young. And I think so. That probably is it. But I'll tell you, like, I've got siblings, and all of us are a little bit different. Like, my brother, I have an older brother that I'm very close with, very competitive with. But his life, he has more life in balance than I did. His was more about living life and experiences and less about work. Work was just about making some money. Where where work is my life, really. It's my career. It's my identity. It's been a very important part of my life. I think work's better than golf or anything else. I enjoy it more.
Work is your hobby. Work is your passion.
Yes, it is.
Well, you mentioned Walking Beans. Well, I understand delivering papers, but tell us more about what Walking Beans is as a job.
So they plant soybeans, and they're planted in rows, and weeds will grow in the rows. So to harvest, they want the weeds eliminated. So it's middle of the summer. It's hot and humid. Snakes, you know, bees, all kinds of bugs, and you would take a machete and walk the rows, so monotonous, cutting down weeds so that as they harvested, it was a cleaner crop.
Well, you grew up in central Illinois.
Yeah.
Went to school in western Illinois. Mm-hmm. How did you get to Dallas?
I wasn't in college and in high school. High school's a little bit of a wild man, so college I wasn't a great student, but I was very committed to getting into business. I went to work for my dad in the Midwest for maybe 18 months to 2 years after I got out of school. I sold life insurance for a while, hated it, renovated houses for a while, enjoyed it, but always wanted to be in real estate. And my dad had a partner, and they'd agreed not to hire any siblings. I finally wore him down, went to work there. Soon after I got there, I realized I was in a market where it wasn't a large enough check. So every deal I was doing, I was active, I was successful, but I wanted to play in a bigger market. And so I started going to Chicago to try to figure it out. It's kind of when fast food was growing. And so I had no money, but I would try to tie up land sites where you could build a restaurant pad. You'd get one, and then you'd break it into two or three pads. And so I'd have to go find an opportunity, find the money, but I came to Dallas on a vacation, and I just saw that it was early 80s, 1982. They're building buildings everywhere. I loved the climate, and I just went back to my dad. I said, "Dad, I think I need to go to Dallas." And he said to me, one of the things I never forgot is he goes, "I don't want you to go because I was hoping you would take over the family business, but you should go because you can always come back. And if it doesn't work out, we'll be here for you." And so I went, and you know, I didn't know anybody, but I knew that it was a market that just felt like it was. I liked the weather. Like you and I had talked before we got on the air about coming from the Midwest and the weather. I mean, it's heaven here. Like it's November, and today it's supposed to be cold, but it's in the 50s. It's fabulous.
You said you were in real estate in Chicago. Did you really realize what you were doing in developing your career you said, looking for paths for fast food operations? Was that an idea that came to you? Did someone suggest that to you? Where'd that start?
I was frustrated by the fact that I could go sell a house, but I was selling a $20,000 house, so I was going to make $600. And the first time I made $600, that was a lot of money. But after you've made it for a while, you want more, right? So then I looked for commercial, and it was a market in the Midwest, the small town I was from, La Salle, Peru, where there was just no growth. It was a stagnant market, so there was no influx where you could develop of any magnitude, right? So if you're a big building there is building a 3,000-foot strip center somewhere. So I started going to Chicago, and I just looked for where there was opportunity, and there was fast food opening in our town. And I noticed that they were popping up in these places, so I thought that was a growth area, so I started focusing on that. And I ended up brokering 80 Pizza Huts to a group of buyers. There was a franchisee that got in trouble and needed to liquidate 80 of them. And we weren't buying the operating business. We were just buying the real estate with leases. Biggest deal I'd ever done, and it just made me think bigger.
Well, you started in commercial real estate in Chicago. What's interesting about your business is when you came to Dallas, you could do your business anywhere. It doesn't matter where you are.
Right.
Did that hit you immediately that you could build it bigger in the Dallas-Fort Worth area?
Well, Dallas is probably the most progressive city. I mean, I think it's the best business climate I've ever been in. And I've done business from Texas and Illinois to the West Coast. I've always gone west more than east. And California It used to be everybody wanted to play on the coast. Now I think, and Texas was kind of redlined for institutional investments because they thought it was a little bit of the wild, wild west. There's too much land, too many crazy developers, just because there was a lot of fluctuations early, which I thought was good as an investor because it's good and it's bad. And when you get these big swings, it creates opportunity. But I think Texas is the, I wouldn't want to be anywhere but Dallas. I think Dallas has the brightest future. People are going to come here, like we're in the middle of COVID. Everything's slow, but it's still not as bad here as it could be somewhere else. And I think we're a right-to-work state. We embrace and welcome growth. And Texas, what I love about Dallas is, if you can add value, there's no barriers. People welcome new people. People coming from California or Chicago or wherever they're coming from, come on. And if you add value and you can and are a good quality person, the door's open. Now, I think in the Midwest, it's more cliquish. It's more difficult to break through. So I think I found Dallas to be limitless opportunity. It's all about your drive and trying to be smart enough. It's about relationships, right? It's trying to meet enough people to be able to create some value.
I'm going to come back talking to you about your father one more time. My father is also a major influence on my life. He had come to Dallas for work. I came to see him in Dallas one time and fell in love with it. He mentioned to me, this is similar to what you mentioned earlier, that he would mention to me that the national bird of Dallas-Fort Worth was the crane because of all the buildings being built. Yeah. I experienced that too, came to Dallas about the same time. So you just saw a tremendous opportunity for yourself.
Yeah, and you know, I got here and got it figured out about the time the RTC time hit, where the government changed the tax laws and made real estate values just plummet, right? And you could see, it was one of those situations where anybody, it was a little bit like the Wild Wild West. Nobody was respecting dollars. So too much money was free. Lenders were putting money out and in ways that didn't make any sense. Nobody was looking at the downside. I think one of the things I really learned early in my career is I think time is number one risk as a real estate investor. You know, things can change. COVID can hit. You can change the government, and the government can have a different view on tax laws, et cetera. So I think time's a big risk. And but Texas is a market that I think is just got such a bright future because people that come here that have talent see it and they stay here. Now, it makes it very competitive. I think the best real estate people in the country are based in Dallas.
You had mentioned before the show started about a couple of things that happened to you, and I'm a big believer in any time we have a setback that makes us stronger, as we were talking about before. But you had a couple things that happened, and talk about how that influenced your life. First of all, was a motorcycle accident.
Yeah, I've had several things in my life where I've kind of created my own obstacles. I had an alcohol problem early. When I went through college, I worked my way through college, I got out, and I had some success. And again, success is all personal perception, right, of success. And I kind of got lost in alcohol. And when I came to Dallas, I was probably abusing alcohol, and I got sober after I was here 18 months. Well, when you have an alcohol problem, you have lots of debris in your life. So we can go back to that, but I'm just saying I had a lot of debris in my life. Once I got sober, I had to clean up all the messes. I was not truthful. I mean, because when you are dysfunctional, you create lots of dysfunction, and you hang out with people that are dysfunctional so you feel normal. But it took me probably 5 years after I got sober to clean up all my messes. You got to go make amends to people, et cetera. It's kind of part of AA, which I got involved in. But my business was doing well, but I was bruised up. I got married young. I drank my way out of my marriage, and I went on a motorcycle trip to Colorado. I was bachelor. It was in 1997. My business was doing really well, and I got in an accident. I was in Aspen heading to Telluride on 4th of July weekend. It was actually July 5th in the afternoon. And I got run off the road, and I was laying in the ditch. And I actually thought it was a pretty impactful wreck. I had torn up my leg, powdered my arms. My arms didn't work at all, bones sticking out. It was pretty And I actually thought I was taking my last breath in that ditch. And for the everything that was important became unimportant. Money, status, etc., all that stuff that people get caught in the world about, all that became unimportant. And everything I'd put on my in my life on hold became very important. My legacy, but not my legacy to the world, but to my family and to myself. If I die in this ditch today, what have I done? What have I accomplished? What have I done with the opportunities I've had? My relationship with my kids, because I had a broken marriage and I had two kids that were disappointed that I was a recovering alcoholic and the way I lived when I was an alcoholic. And I had no intimacy in my life because I was recovering from the tattered marriage. I kind of was a consumer. I was building wealth and chasing opportunity, but I had no intimacy in my life. So I'm laying there in this ditch. I had no relationship with God. I'd been raised in the church, and my family, we went to church every Sunday, but I kind of walked away from that. And for the first time in years, I prayed because I was in fear. I didn't know if I was going to heaven or hell or if I was going to ever get out of that ditch. And I made a deal with God. I said, God, if you get me out of this, I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to change. And I already knew as I was living what was in my mind. I just wasn't dealing with it. Anyway, so I laid there for 45 minutes. I had no pain. And everything just felt warm. So I think I was in shock. And, well, I kind of thought I'd start bleeding from the mouth and die. And I didn't. So then I started figuring out to try to get a way out. And my left leg was wrapped around my chest. So I had to kind of crawl up sideways. And I crawled up. Somebody pulled over immediately. They took me to a hospital. It took 5 hours to get me to the hospital. It was, and I ended up with 20-hour surgery in the hospital to put my arms together. And I'll tell you an interesting story. So I went through this, and I wake up the next morning from the surgery, and I'm sitting up in my hospital bed, and they've got both of my arms propped up, and they're wrapped in gauze, and there's blood oozing out of them. And when I went into the surgery, the doctor said, this is about as bad a break on two arms as I've seen. And they're up in Aspen, and we're in Gunnison, Colorado. He said, I do a lot of this, and you did a really good job here. I didn't care because I was so happy I was alive. But when I woke up, I realized how bad it was. And I had a male nurse. His name was Paul. He had been a detective in New York, shot twice, and he changed. He said, I'm out of here, and he became a male nurse in Colorado. I didn't know any of this at the time. So he comes in. He goes, well, you've really screwed yourself up. You need to learn how to eat. And he put a piece of rubber in my hand. And he brought me some Cheerios, and he stuck a spoon in the rubber because my right arm, my elbow was broke. I couldn't use it. I was using my left hand. And I'm spilling Cheerios all over myself. And I started crying. And he looked at me, and he goes, I'm going to clean you up, and it's a beautiful day, and we need to go outside and give you some air. So they lifted me up, put me in a wheelchair, and he put me outside under a tree and just left me there. I went in there 2 minutes, and a van pulls up, and there's a paraplegic getting out of his van, and I watched him go from his driver's side to the wheelchair to the lift to get out of the van to go in for therapy, one after another. And I was out there about 2 hours, and he came and got me, and I looked at him and I said, I got it. I'm grateful. I'm lucky. No more complaining, no more crying. I'm in. And he was such a great teacher to put me in that position that early. And then from that day on, I have been grateful for every day that I've got.
You mentioned lack of intimacy a little while ago, and I'm sure that experience had an impact on you. But you say about your business, it's all about the relationships. Talk about going from no intimacy to building a business that's built on relationships.
Yeah. When I came to Dallas, I tried to get a job. And nobody would hire me because I didn't add any value. They'd ask me, where's Central Expressway? I didn't know anything. So I went and sold homes for a home builder because all I had to do is know that development. In life, it's always been about who you know and valuing those relationships. And early on in my career in Dallas, I didn't have the confidence to build a relationship and maintain it. And one of the things I learned, I had a relationship. I met Ray Hunt once. Ray wanted, he had a business, and I was an up-and-coming broker and developer. Not a developer then, but he wanted to merge my company with his because he had a management company that was losing money. And so I got to meet with Ray. And in the meeting, he says, I don't do anything unless I'm in control. And I'm 28, and I don't have any money, but I'm going, I don't think I want to give control up to my life, even though it is Ray Hunt. And so I passed. 3 months later, he called me back and we made a deal. He sold me his business, this real estate business, because we had to go in and make some really hard decisions to turn it. But my point is, I let that relationship go. And I couldn't tell you how many times after that, that I wished I would have stayed in touch with Mr. Hunt, because there's many times where I could have used that relationship. So I've used that as a, I don't know, a springboard or a reminder that when I make a relationship, I keep it. And now, again, not all relationships, once you search them out, are valuable. So some flitter away. But I try to touch base with my relationships at least once a quarter. And I keep myself, I have a book I carry with me every day, and I have people I reach out to. And it's just nothing but just touching base, because I always want to be able to maintain those relationships. Because, and maybe not for me, maybe it's for somebody else, because big at my stage in my career, I want to help people. All the things that were in the way for me, I want to help other people not have to deal with them as much. So I want to be approachable. I want to be a person that helps people. And so all those relationships help me help them.
Well, all of this that you talked to led you to a successful commercial real estate business. Talk about some of your portfolio and some of the buildings you've been involved with.
Well, I started in the service business, and one of the best things, my heart was to own. I always wanted to own. In the service business, you figure out what's really important to tenants. And I think early in my career, it was frustrating because architects and developers would build buildings that they thought were pretty, but they weren't driven by what the tenants wanted. Today, it's such an efficient business that everybody knows what the tenant wants and they're building what they want. They want efficiency and they want amenities. And so I think my brokerage background really helped me be a good developer. I have been one that going into this last cycle, so I started tenant rep service business, third party property management business, then development, and I didn't have any money. So I would go in and work for fees instead of ownership. I had to make enough money to where I could invest, to where I could be an owner as well as not just a fee developer. So today, I am partners. We have family offices that we deal with, high net worth people that we go do our business with. But we're very focused on, like going into 07, I love the tollway. North Dallas Tollway, I think, is the spine of Dallas. Everybody today is playing on the ends, Uptown and Legacy. I like Legacy. We're active there. We're active along the tollway. So far, I have not gone downtown because I think downtown has too much commodity real estate and Uptown is just too competitive. I haven't been able to find a good site and a good position. So, but what I think is going to happen is, and it's already happening, is everybody's realizing the middle's better, and I think they're going to come back. So LBJ, Galleria area, and the tollway is kind of where I've set my stake, and we own all but one vacant piece of land on the tollway from LBJ to 190. So if there's going to be anything happening on the tollway, they're going to do it with me other than one site.
Should someone want to find out more about you and Carley Partners, how would they find out?
Well, they could go to our web page, or they can call me at 972-759-7710. I mean, I think we're a very active and visible company. And, you know, we just want to be able to... I think life changed for me in business when I started focusing on the person, the client, and what their needs were and not mine. And so I think anybody that, if they have an interest, will find the experience very positive.
And you can also get Cawley Partners' website, which is CawleyPartners.com, on our website, too. Bill, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show. This was a wonderful interview, chance to find out about the real person behind the business. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I appreciate being on, Steve.
We've been speaking with Bill Cawley. Bill is principal of Cawley Partners. This has been a terrific show. Thank you very much for listening to us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.